Hello, everyone. Good morning. So in our first talk, we talked about remediating nutrients. In our second talk, we talked about remediating pathogens. And I'm going to finish the triangle and start talking about remediating agrochemicals. Now, I'm going to be talking to you about remediating agrochemicals from recaptured irrigation water using granular activated carbon, which is what I have in my hand here. So a little bit about agrochemical remediation. Basically, some of growers in the United States, large growers, have started recapturing and recirculating their irrigation water. There are several benefits for this, such as reduction in cost of fertilizer, as well as increasing water use efficiency. However, there's some reality to this. Some downside is that when we apply pesticides, sometimes residuals end up in our recaptured irrigation water. And if we do not take out these residuals, they can have a loss in quality and create a crop loss. There's a photo here. An example of this is paclobutrazol, which is a very common plant growth regulator that growers have shown that it is accumulating in their water. And so this is a potential problem. So here's a visual representation of how agrochemical recirculation occurs. Usually when a grower is recirculating water, they store their water either in storage tanks or in retention ponds. And then they use this water for a sub-irrigation event or an overhead irrigation event. Now, with just these two steps, there's no problems. However, when we add pesticides, when pesticides are applied, they don't always end up on the plant or in the container. And that means that they're either on the side of the containers, in between plants, or on the floor. And so when a flood floor irrigation event occurs, this excess residual will be taken into account with the excess water. This where lies in potential for activated carbon filtration to remove these residual contaminants prior to being stored again. Here's a photo of three industry-scale GAC systems currently being used to remove paclobutrazol. A little bit introduction of activated carbon. Granular activated carbon, also abbreviated as GAC, comes from various sources such as bituminous coal and coconut coir. And basically, it has interesting properties at high porosity or high amount of absorption sites. Essentially, when water containing contaminants comes in contact with GAC, it absorbs onto these pores, and over time, these pores become completely consumed. One benefit of activated carbon is that it can be regenerated, meaning that it goes through a process where all the contaminants become desorbed from the product, ultimately leaving a fresh GAC product. This ultimately reduces the cost of the GAC as well as makes it somewhat sustainable. So with this in mind, we were interested in looking at some of the potential commonly used agrochemicals in floriculture and ornamental production and wanting to see if activated carbon could remove them. So as you can see here, we have activated carbon material we used and a small-scale GAC system that I constructed at the University of Florida. As you can see, we have three GAC filters, and then this system allows us to manipulate the flow rate and the amount of filters that solution comes in contact with. And while we were at it, we actually were thinking maybe there are potential indicator chemicals we can pass through GAC. An indicator chemical would be something that a grower could use on site as a management strategy to be able to tell if my GAC is completely saturated with contaminant. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. So once again, my two experiments that we'll be discussing today. My experiment one was basically testing a variety of pesticides for removal efficacy with GAC. And for my experiment two, we tested various indicator chemicals. So for my experiment one, this table outlines the 11 agrochemicals we tested. In the first column, you can see the active ingredient that we used, the brand or trade name of each chemical, the chemical group ranging from insecticides, herbicides, PGRs, and sanitizers, and then the applied concentration. This is the concentration in parts per million that we actually pass through the GAC system. And then we have the laboratory analysis that we use for each chemical. Now, the concentration that we chose to start with was basically the recommended label rate for each chemical for ornamental crops. Now, we chose to do a 1/10 dilution of each of these concentrations because if you think about it, when you apply chemical to pots, not all of that is going to end up in a residual. A lot of it will end up actually in the pot, but there will be a fraction that ends up in the water. So we took a 1/10 dilution to act as a potential residual. For my materials and methods for my experiment one, we used a bituminous coal GAC source, We had a continuous flow rate of 6 liters per minute, and we had a total of 3 GAC contact times. Now, contact time is defined as the amount of time that solution containing contaminant passed through a GAC filter. This table outlines our treatments in further detail. On the far right, our furthest right-hand column, you can see our contact time in seconds, ranging from 0 seconds or no filtration, all the way to about a minute of contact time with a total amount of filters. As you can see, as the contact time increases, the amount of filters we used and the filter volume increased. For my experimental design, we used a randomized complete block design for each chemical, and we replaced each canister with fresh GAC after each time run. We had a total of 4 experimental blocks with 1 replicate solution taken per contact time, and we had a total of 3 contact times, generating a total of 12 solutions per chemical. Here are the results from my experiment 1. As you can see on the first column, we have each chemical categorized by its chemical type, the method detection limit, or the minimum concentration detectable by the analysis we used, and a relative efficacy of removal with our highest level of treatment of 64 seconds, and then the actual percentage reduction from initial concentration. Essentially, as more stars increase, the greater removal occurred, with 4 stars equaling 100% removal, or complete reduction below the minimum detection limit, and 1 star equaling below an 80% removal. Now, as we can see, only 3 out of the 11, or there's 12 here, 3 out of the 12 chemicals that we tested were reduced below a 90% reduction, and only one of them, bifenthrin, was only reduced about 70%. However, if we look at this, overall, all the chemicals that we tested had above a 50% reduction, or in general, were relatively effective at being removed with GAC, regardless of the chemical type. Now, quickly, I'd like us to look at the properties of all these chemicals. Now, as you can see, we have active ingredient on the first column, and then we have 4 different parameters of each of these chemicals. Now, these parameters are used by scientists to basically estimate the possibility of a chemical being persistent or mobile in soil and water. As we can see, the take-home message is that there was no trends, regardless of these parameters, there were no trends between their effectiveness of being removed and these different parameters. So when we're working with growers or scientists that are wanting to know if something can be removed by GAC, it's likely that they don't go off these parameters. It's better that they actually run small-scale tests such as that we did. From my experiment 1 conclusions, we saw that each chemical was removed by at least 70%. And as we saw a general trend, as we increased contact time with GAC, the total concentration of the chemical decreased as well. And basically, we were effective regardless of the chemical type, and even some of the chemicals were reduced below their method detection limit. For my experiment 2, we wanted to look at indicator chemicals. So the concept behind this is that a grower has a GAC system, and they're using it continuously all year. However, they don't know how well their GAC is working, and over time, that GAC is becoming further and further more contaminated or getting loaded. So how do they know it's still working or how it's still taking out chemicals? So what they can do is put a potential indicator chemical, purposely pass this through a GAC system, and then see how well it gets taken out. If the indicator chemical does not get taken out, that means that the GAC is completely loaded or it's contaminated completely and it needs to be replaced. If the indicator chemical does get taken out, that means the GAC is still working. It's still taking out the chemicals that you want. The 3 indicator chemicals we wanted to look at were iron EDHA, which is a common micronutrient that's water-soluble and also gives a red tint when solubilized in water. We use ceracid blue dye, which is a common fertilizer dye that's very low toxic to plants and is also a very bright blue visual color. And then we use chlorine bleach, which is a common sanitizer used to sanitize irrigation lines, but can also be measured very easily, cheaply, with an over-counter testing kit. Materials and methods were very similar to my experiment 1, where we had bituminous coal, a 6 liter per minute or flow rate. However, we had 4 contact times here, ranging from 0 seconds or no filtration, all the way up to about a minute of contact time. We used a spectrophotometer and a colorimeter to analyze these chemicals. The experimental design was also very similar to my experiment 1, where we use a randomized complete block design, and we use fresh GAC after each time run. We had a total of 3 blocks, 3 replicate solutions collected, and then a total of 4 contact times, generating 36 solutions per chemical. This table shows my results from this experiment. On the first column, we have contact time in seconds, ranging from 0 to 64 seconds, and then we have each chemical concentration in parts per million. As you can see with iron EDDHA, we had about 50% removal with our highest level of filtration. This indicates to us that, okay, if I want excess nutrients, chelated nutrients, to be in my recaptured water, this is a potential problem because GAC is taking out those nutrients I want to keep. That means I have to supplement, I have to input this iron back into the water. For fertilizer dye, there was about almost 100% removal with our highest level filtration. And then for chlorine, free and total chlorine, we had 100% removal after 12 seconds of contact time. For me, this indicates that chlorine may not be a good indicator chemical because it's just too well effectively taken out by GAC. However, from a management standpoint, if a grower uses chlorine as their sanitizing chemical, they're worried about this being phytotoxic to their plants, they can use GAC to take out chlorine and reduce it below a phytotoxic level. Here's a visual indication of fertilizer dye and iron EDDHA with an increase of contact time with GAC. And as you can see, there is a visual difference. So my preliminary conclusions are that indicator chemicals may be an appropriate strategy for growers. However, large-scale experiments need to be done to properly calibrate and figure out how to procedurally use an indicator chemical. We've been working with several growers that are currently using GAC systems, and what they've been doing is taking routine, either weekly, monthly samples prior to GAC filtration and after GAC filtration, and then sending it off for lab analysis. This allows the grower to know how much potential chemical there is in their water over time, as well as seeing how well their GAC is doing over throughout the growing season. We do now know that GAC can remove chelated iron and potentially other micronutrients. So this could be problematic for growers, especially considering that they want to save money on recycling fertilizer. Overall, we've seen that GAC is very effective at removing a wide range of agrochemicals, and previous research in my master's has shown that it's very, very effective at removing pacobutrazol, a very commonly used plant growth regulator. So there's a lot of potential for this technology, and I think it's a very relatively low cost. We have several publications currently in the works that will be outlining basically the overall cost with several case studies. And with that, I'd like to thank the Clean Water 3 team, who's basically in this room, and all the collaborators, my master's committee, and my advisor, Dr. Paul Fisher. And with that, I would like to take any questions you may have. We have not looked at different sizes of GAC. So GAC, when you buy the product, it usually comes in a U.S. mess size. For example, the GAC we used was an 8x30. So that means that it's a minimum and maximum U.S. mesh of 8 and 30. That's just the relative size that the products come in. We have not tested different sizes. However, you're somewhat limited on the sizes you can use for water systems. Usually the two main sizes that are recommended for potable water systems are 8x30 and 12x40 GAC. We have looked, however, at the different types of GAC sources, such as coconut coir and bituminous coal, which are the two most popularly used in potable water systems. And we did not really find any differences between them as far as removing pacobutrazol. Yes, sir. So we're a little limited on that. We have only really worked with two main growers, but large-scale growers. And the max that I've seen with them they've said 200 gallons per minute. But we've worked with ones that are about 50 gallons per minute as well as 200 gallons per minute. It really depends on the parameters of the tank itself. So I think if you're ever considering something like this, I would actually work with a GAC provider, and probably they know more of the specifications of that matter.